Okay, so the whole purpose of studying all about this is to give us a real feeling of, you know, I want to be happy, and I deserve to be happy, and I'm not going about it the right way. You know, there's another way to do this, and I really want to free myself from all of my dysfunctional behavior, my dysfunctional attitudes, okay? In other words, psychological therapists, I want to stop being in denial, yeah, and make a determination to free myself from all my addictions and all my dysfunctional things. Remembering here that addiction and dysfunction just means the whole attachment to cyclic existence that we have. So it's a much broader thing than in psychology. Yeah, much broader. The same basic principle. And Lama Zopa, during one teaching, I took, you know, notes, and this has always been very, very powerful, so I typed it up in what you said, because it's just so powerful what he said. He said, our whole problem is that we took this body and mind, which are in the nature of pervading compounded suffering. Remember when we studied the three kinds of suffering or unsatisfactory experiences? The pervading compounded one was just having a body and mind that are under the influence of ignorance, the disturbing attitudes and karma. Remember that? Okay, that's the pervading compounded suffering. What made us be born with such aggregates? This is the question. What made us be born? Why are we in a body that gets old and sick and dies? Why do we have a mind that is so confused and dissatisfied? Why? Yeah, I mean, this is the real key. This is the basic question in our life. Why is this happening? Now, if you say it's happening because there's an external creator, then, as Lama Zopa said, you need to get rid of the external creator, because you can get a new one, because that one is the cause of all your problems. Okay? But it's not an external creator. It's nobody else that put us here. How did we get here? It's our own ignorance and disturbing attitudes and the karma we create by it. Yeah. So this is really making us look, why are we here? Yeah. So, you know, it's like, so when I have problems, I say, why am I having this problem? Well, I have this problem because this person is, you know, doing this and this and this. No, that isn't the principal reason. Yeah? I'm having this headache right now because I'm in cyclic existence, because I'm under the influence of disturbing attitudes and karma. You know? And by my disturbing attitudes and karma, I got born into this life with this body and these minds and all this karma ripening. And here's the scene. Here's the circus. Yeah? So it's really, you know, kind of taking responsibility for our own situation, not blaming ourselves. We don't blame ourselves. It's not that we're bad people because we're in samsara. It's not that we're sinners and we deserve to suffer or any of that kind of stuff. But it's just when I'm not mindful, when I don't take care of myself, when I don't really explore what's reality and what isn't, this is the jams I continually get myself into messes. And so in some ways, this is very empowering, because if we get ourselves into the messes, we're also the ones who can get ourselves out, because all we have to do is stop creating the cause. Yeah. So it's not a question of, you know, perpetuating some external being so that they bestow grace or that they move the puppet strings differently. It's a thing of, you know, generating our own wisdom and compassion, bringing those to the forefront, and then we free ourselves. Okay, Buddhas and Bodhisattvas help, of course. They influence us. They guide us. But, you know, we're the ones responsible. This is very similar to modern psychological theory, isn't it? You know, be responsible for your own jams instead of pawning it off on someone else. Yeah, but at the same time we're doing this, we have to have a whole lot of compassion for ourselves, you know? And compassion, remember, is the wish not to, for others to be free of suffering. well, we also have to have that same wish for ourselves, you know. So it's not like, oh, I'm in samsara because look what a creep I am and I deserve this, you know. It's like, no, I'm a sentient being. I have the clear light nature of the mind. I can be happy. I can become a Buddha. But I need to treat myself better. So practicing Dharma is a way of treating yourself better. Yeah, remember that when your knees hurt. Yeah. Yeah, but practicing is a way of treating yourself better. Okay, so Rinpoche went on. What made us be born with such aggregates? Did we have a choice in previous lives? Well, if we had a choice, you know, we didn't have a choice. We didn't have a choice. So again, this idea that some people have of you're in the intermediate stage and you choose your next rebirth to learn lessons. I mean, we didn't have choice. If we had a choice, we wouldn't choose to suffer, would we? Would we? Hello? Yeah? I mean, we wouldn't. We wouldn't. So it was clear we didn't have a choice. Why didn't we have a choice? Because we were completely on automatic. Yeah, we were completely just overrun by our disturbing attitudes. Okay, so Rinpoche said, did we have a choice in previous lives? Did we have control so that we could be born without suffering? No. The fact that we took this body, which is in the nature of suffering, shows that we didn't have choice. We've been under the control of disturbing attitudes and karma since beginningless time. Yeah? So it's just the disturbing attitudes and karma. We've just kind of let them. We flew with the wrong current. Okay? We didn't flow with the current of our wisdom, compassion mind. We flowed with the current of our disturbing attitudes and contaminated karma mind. Yeah? We just went along with it. And so we didn't have a choice when we were like that. Having the burden of cyclic existence, that is, these aggregates, the self has to experience suffering. So once we have a body and a mind under the influence of disturbing attitudes and karma, then we're going to have unsatisfactory experiences. That's it. The rope which ties the thorns of the five aggregates to our back is disturbing attitudes and karma. So that means the whole source of all the problem is the disturbing attitudes and the karma. That's the whole source. If we get rid of that, then the whole corrupt thing falls apart, has no energy, doesn't exist on its own. See, that's the thing. All this thing is dependent arising. You know, it's not like cyclic existence exists as an external thing out there, solid, that has to be like that. It's only that way because it arose depending on causes. So we have the power to stop those causes and do something different. So, to go back to the drawing, remember I said there were two sets of causes and effects? The Lord of Death and the whole wheel of life here is one set of causes and effects. Yeah, with the chicken, the snake, and the rooster being the causes and the other things around it being the effects. Then you have up here in this corner the Buddha pointing towards the moon. Yeah? So the moon is nirvana. Yeah. Nirvana is the cessation of all the disturbing, all the unsatisfactory experiences and their causes. It's just the removal, the lack, the cessation of those things, the non-arising of them. And then the Buddha is showing us that. So the Buddha's gesture is like the path to enlightenment. So it's not that the Buddha is the cause of the nirvana. I mean, the Buddha is a cooperative condition of our nirvana. But the gesture is like our following the path. When we follow the path, then we get the result, which is nirvana. So that has another set of cause and effect. Okay, so we have the two sets of cause and effect shown in the drawing. And you often hear people talking about you know, the finger pointing towards the moon, and remember the moon is the important thing, not the finger. So it's the same here. I mean, the Buddha's showing the way. Nirvana is the important thing for us to attain, not just, you know, memorizing teachings. But in another way, we can see the gesture as the path to follow to attain nirvana, and that is quite important. Okay, we definitely have to follow that. So this cyclic existence, I wanted to kind of define cyclic existence. Because we tend to say, oh yes, this is samsara, we're all in samsara, and we tend to think the external environment is samsara, America is samsara. Okay, we don't we? You know, we say, oh, samsara is too much, meaning, you know, my job's too much, you know, everything around me is too much, I gotta get out of samsara, where's the airplane? Okay, samsara is not the environment we live in. Okay, samsara is our body and mind. That's samsara. Our body and mind under the influence of disturbing attitudes and karma. Our body and mind that make us continually circle within these six realms. Okay, so samsara can refer to the present body and mind, or it can refer just to our process of circling in the six realms, taking one body and mind after another. Yeah, body and mind of a god, body and mind of a hell realm, body and mind of a human, body and mind of a hungry ghost. Okay, just this. That's samsara. That's cyclic existence. So when we say we want to generate the determination to be free of samsara, that's, you know, it's not that we have to move out of Seattle. Okay? It's we have to free ourselves from the body and mind under the influence of disturbing attitudes and karma. That's real important because, you know, we don't want to, I mean, the environment does influence us, but it's not the environment that's the problem, that's the root problem. I mean, of course, we have to choose our environment well so that we can practice well. But to remember the basic problem is being under the control of the disturbing attitudes and thus taking a body and mind which, again, keep the whole thing going. Yeah?
I mean, that's my question.
Right, right. It's like, if only things were a little bit different, then I could practice. So, you see, I can't practice well because I have a job, or I can't practice well, you know, because the cat bites me when I'm meditating, or I can't practice well because I can't get time off to go to retreat, or I can't practice well because the Indian radios are blaring, or, you know, it's like we always think if only I were somewhere else doing something else, then I could practice better. But my present situation is just so filled with obstacles that it's difficult to practice. Okay? What we forget is that samsara is one big obstacle. If we had no obstacles, we wouldn't be in samsara. That's the whole point. You know, it's like if we had no obstacles, we wouldn't be in samsara. So if we're in samsara, of course we're going to have obstacles. Of course. So it's like wherever we go, whatever we do, there's going to be some obstacles. Now, it's true, some places and some goings on, we're going to have more obstacles than others. Yeah, so that's why you try and create a good environment around yourself. Try and live in a peaceful place, have a job with right livelihood, don't get involved in too many clubs and hobbies and social activities, you know, meditate in a quiet place instead of on I-5, you know, kind of put yourself in a good environment, but don't think that the good environment is the thing that's going to do it, because wherever you go, you're going to have obstacles. And this came real clear to me right after I was ordained. A few months after that, I went from India back to Nepal. And about a dozen of us went up to Laudo, which is the place in the Himalayas where Lama Zopa, his previous life, where he was this meditator for 20 years. And so, you know, in his previous life, he was called Laudo Lama, and he meditated in this one cave for 20 years. So, you know, the energy in this cave is like, you know, I mean, when you're with Lama Zopa, the energy right now, so you can imagine 20 years of a room where he sat, you know. And I remember we went in there and we were doing a retreat in Lama Zopa's cave, Lama Zopa in there doing the retreat with us, my mind couldn't concentrate on anything. Yeah? I mean, it just came so clear to me there. It's not the environment, because here I am in this incredible environment, but my mind's totally bananas. Yeah? It's not the environment. So, I mean, of course, putting yourself in a good environment. I mean, if that was bad, I'm sure, you know, living down in Kathmandu and trying to meditate would have been worse. But it's, you know, fixing the external world isn't going to be the only thing that's going to make things better. Because samsara is one big obstacle. And that's why there's this whole cycle of teaching called the thought training teachings. Because the thought training teachings really revolve around how to turn bad circumstances into the path. Because as long as we're in samsara, we're going to have bad circumstances. So then the thing is there a way that we can take these things and transmute them into the path? Or every time we come up with a hindrance, are we just going to, you know, get blocked with it and get frustrated? So this whole thing of changing bad circumstances into the path, the teachings, you know, the wheel of sharp weapons, the eight verses of thought transformation, 7-point training of the mind, in advice to a spiritual friend, Lama Zopa's new book, Transforming Problems. These are all things revolving around this thought training, transforming bad circumstances. Because then, you know, until we're Buddha, we're going to have them. And so similarly, you know, just to emphasize that, you know, this world is not samsara, is that when somebody is liberated, when their mind, let's say somebody's enlightened, okay, so they've totally eliminated all the disturbing attitudes and the karma, all the undesirable experiences, developed all their good qualities, then if that person is living here, they see this as a pure land. Yeah? They go in the middle of the inner city, they see a pure land. Yeah? They go to Somalia, they see a pure land. Yeah. Like you have the bodhisattvas, who out of compassion, the high-level bodhisattvas voluntarily who choose rebirth in a certain place to benefit others. So somebody like His Holiness, you know, looks like ordinary human being. But I'm sure, you know, his experience, if we could crawl inside His Holiness's mind, which we can't yet, you know, I mean, once we become Buddhas, then we'll understand what his experience is. But I'm sure his experience is vastly different from ours. Because you can see, and just even two people in the same room have very different experiences. Have you ever had something happen where somebody came, you know, you left a place like feeling very good and the companion you were with said, oh, wasn't that awful? Same situation, same place. Yeah, so the state of mind is a real big determiner. Yeah, if your mind's overwhelmed by delusion and karma, you could be here and this appears like a hell realm to you. Yeah. You can see, you know, you can see very clearly, you know, when people have, you know, are flip out or have, you know, really go completely psychotic, they're in the same environment, but they're perceiving a hell realm due to their karma. So it's not the place. It's, you know, so you can be here. This can be a pure realm. Interesting to think about that, isn't it? I mean, they say, okay, like we have a glass of water here. So if you're born as a hungry ghost with that kind of karma, when you look at this glass of water, you see pus and blood. Yeah? That's how it looks. That's the karmic vision. That's, you know, how it appears is pus and blood. A human being sees water. A celestial being, a god, because of their incredible karma, when they see it, they see very blissful wisdom. They see very blissful nectar. Yeah? Just karmic appearance. Yeah, we think it's water, this one solid thing. You know, it depends who's perceiving it, what it is. Okay. So next time I'll go through the 12 links again, going more in depth. Yeah, there's a lot to discuss here. Any questions about this?
Well,
Yeah, there's because if we generate the wisdom realizing emptiness, then there's no first link. If you don't know the first link, you don't have the second one, you don't have the third, you don't have the fourth. So that's why there's so much emphasis on the three higher trainings, the, you know, ethics, concentration, and wisdom. Wisdom being the one that actually cuts the link of ignorance. Concentration is the thing that makes your mind stable enough so that the wisdom can transform your mind. And ethics being the thing that you know, removes the very gross misbehavior and prevents you from creating more obstacles so that you can generate your concentration and your wisdom. The way to get out of this whole cycle, we have to cut the ignorance. So the path is called the three higher trainings: ethics, concentration, and wisdom. Wisdom is the actual thing that cuts the ignorance, the wisdom realizing emptiness. Okay, but to have that wisdom, okay, you need to have the ability to keep your mind firm and steady on what you're meditating on. So you need concentration. Because if you just have wisdom but you can't concentrate on it, it's like boing, and then, you know, nothing sticks. Yeah. In order to generate the concentration and the wisdom, you need to keep good ethical conduct. You know, because if you don't keep good ethical conduct, then your mind gets full of more anger and attachment, so you have more distractions when you're meditating and more negative karma, so you have more external problems too. Okay? So if we keep good ethics, we remove the very gross defilements. We generate concentration, we remove a more subtle level. And if we generate wisdom, we cut the root of all the defilements altogether. The wisdom is the actual liberating thing. That's why, you know, we keep emphasizing compassion and wisdom, the two chief things on the path. The wisdom is the real thing that liberates us. Yeah. Without the wisdom, you might be very compassionate, but, you know, you don't know where you're going. It comes through hearing teachings, thinking about them, and meditating on them. Yeah, so again, you have this three-step process. Wisdom isn't just... yeah? Okay, it's not a lightning bolt. It's like you have to hear teachings so that you know how to cultivate the wisdom and what it is you're trying to be wise about, what the object of the meditation is when you're meditating on wisdom. And then you need to think about those teachings to make sure you understand them properly. And then you need to meditate on them, put them into practice, integrate them in your mind. It's a three-step process. It takes time. Yeah, it takes time. Yeah. But again, you know, when you think about this, you can really see the kindness of the Buddha, because the Buddha is the one who gave the teachings, who showed the whole way for us to free ourselves. Yeah, if the Buddha didn't show the teachings, we couldn't hear them and contemplate and meditate on them. Yeah. So when you think about this, then that again makes your refuge much deeper. Okay, because you can really understand how the Buddha is a guide from the disadvantages of cyclic existence. Kindness of the Buddha. Because we often take the Buddha and the Dharma and Sangha very much for granted. Like, of course, you know, there's a Buddha and there's teachings and there's a, you know, there's realized beings. Of course. Well, no, I mean, again, you know, I mean, there's places in this universe where the beings don't have the karma for the Buddha to appear, so they can't learn the teachings. Yeah. So we're quite fortunate that we're in a place where the teaching, you know, where the Buddha has appeared, has given the teachings, the lineage of these teachings exists, we have the opportunity to practice. very much the kindness of Buddha Dharma Sangha. So do you see how when I'm explaining things, even though we've been going on the long rim step by step, are you seeing how all the meditations are interrelated? Like we talk about here cyclic existence, and I was just relating it to perfect human rebirth and relating it to refuge. Yeah? And relating it to compassion, to generating compassion, because the more you understand this, the more compassion you can have for others too. So it's like even though we're doing the long rim step by step, all these different meditations, you know, they really interrelate, and the more you understand later ones, it relates back to the earlier ones to the later ones. You're all tired of cyclic existence. Why don't we sit quietly for a few minutes, try and contemplate this?